Yes, hello, Mr. Goldenthal. Thank you so much for joining us here on Score Notes. How is everything going for you?
Excellent. It's a beautiful day, and Shakespeare is out there somewhere, and that's good to know.
Indeed, indeed. And just to start off from a composer's perspective, what do you enjoy most about composing music for the cinematic interpretations of Shakespeare, as you did with this film?
Well, there's a double challenge. One thing, Shakespeare already, in a way, wrote music in the sense that his words are acted in verse. That means it's organized in a rhythmic, musical way. So it's almost like being a dance partner or a composing partner in the sense that one has to stay out of the way of not interfering with his meter, also not interfering with the quality of performances of the actors. So you have to sort of dance between the raindrops of the dialogue and monologue and also establish a very, very strong character of the music and also create a atmosphere for the whole movie to sort of sit upon, live with.
Along those lines, what were some of the unique musical directions you were able to bring together for The Tempest?
Mainly orchestration-wise, I was thinking about plucked instruments, and in Africa and West Africa, for example, Senegal and Guinea and Benin, in those places, they have an instrument called a kora, which is a plucked instrument, and that's the griots, they call the sacred storytellers there. The greatest tales of their culture is sung over this plucked instrument. And I thought, I call it the string theory in this case. If you bring it to England, during Shakespeare's day, a string instrument, they call the lute, very common, was a vehicle for much of Shakespeare's poems. John Dowland, for example, Robert Johnson, character composers in his day. As well, if you skip ahead to our culture in the United States, the storytellers, the great storytellers on the guitar, was first thing that comes to mind is Bob Dylan and Woody Guthrie, for example. So I thought maybe this Tempest should be scored mainly with amplified guitars and guitar without being rock and roll per se, but have that vehicle in the same tradition of storytelling and plucked instruments, So that was the body of the sonority that I was going for. Of course, there's different characters like Caliban, and Caliban, I stuck to earthbound instruments like drums and skinned instruments and very crudely but soulfully played flutes. In Ariel, it was nothing but flutes and air, as his name suggests.
And is that part of the fun for you, is to be able to lock in on the type of instruments that would represent a certain character?
Yeah, it's fun until you try it, and then most of the time you fail. But in this case, the fun lasted,
The results are striking. I thoroughly enjoyed what you were able to do for The Tempest. It's
Thank you.
it really whisks you away into this dark, enjoyable world to just dive into musically. So it's fantastic stuff. And to be able to deliver something on par with what you did, can you describe the comfort level you have when collaborating with colleagues that you're familiar with? Does that lend itself a bit more to a creative freedom in a sense?
Yes, it does. Generally, it does because you have the luxury of trust. If the your collaborator is lifted. So I've been doing five movies with Neil Jordan, for example. Neil, understand my creative process and doesn't get nervous, for example, over, he's quirky, he's different, he's approaching it not from the, he's thinking out of the box, so to speak. And doing so many theater works and so many movies with Julie Taymor, it's the same feeling. It's a great deal of trust there. That doesn't make it any easier when it's actually composing for it, but it helps the personal atmosphere.
And does the selection process of the movies you decide to work on, is that related to who the director is of a particular project? Is that, I would assume that plays a big role in your commitment to it.
Director, yeah, plays a huge. If a particular daring director or someone you really respect has a choose a subject, he said, maybe I should have go along with this because we don't. It'll be a creative ride, you know.
Sure, sure. And some of the movies that you've worked on are theatrical in a sense, but when it comes to composing for film versus theater, do you enjoy one more than the other, or are they about on par with each other?
No, they're. I think they're very, 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 very different animals. I think the theater, it changes every day, you know? If you compose, for example, for a theatrical situation, you have, for example, my opera, Grendel, the singer's voice is changing every day. Their capacity for dynamics is changing. The tempos change. One thing about a film is because of close-up, extreme close-ups and editing, you can make a statement with 5 seconds, 10 seconds of music that's enormous, you know? In the theater, you tend to develop things over a longer period of time.
Yeah, those are interesting and compelling differences, really, in the approach
of that. And I'm not talking about quality. You know, a length of something that doesn't make it better, and you know, it's just a it's just a whole different set of variables.
You had mentioned your collaboration with Neil Jordan, and one of the films that I've quite enjoyed over the years is Michael Collins. And I've always wanted to ask you, you know, as you look back on that particular picture, you know, and not to go too far back, how do you recall your time spent on that project? How proud of you are you of that outcome for that film?
Well, I'm very proud. One thing that I remember is when Neil gave me the script, I was noticing that there wasn't really a significant a female part until the middle, and Julia Roberts, I recall. I wanted a female presence from the beginning of the movie during the Bloody Sunday insurgent scene where people are getting blown up and the military environment is taking place and people are on firing squads and stuff like that. And I wanted it to be scored with a female chorus and with singing in the Irish language, the Celtic language. And I wanted to establish that sound to frame the whole picture. Sinead O'Connor was singing solos over a chorus, and had a really raw sort of weather-beaten sound of a female's presence. That's my strongest conceptual remembrance of that, as well as working with Elian Pipes, Irish Pipes and on different click tracks to produce one area of music. So it's almost like you know, two, three Irish pipers playing in a you know, John Coltrane, like John Coltrane manner, you know, for the, some of the chase scenes. And it was very, very, very thrilling to experiment that way. And there goes the you know, the idea of trust. You know, Neil Jordan, that, you know, that the crazy way of approaching something, but he was really open to it.
And do you think in today's filmmaking industry, a lot of directors, perhaps the up-and-coming ones, lack that type of trust in a composer? Because there's a lot of formula that's being developed these days.
I think it was always prevalent. And there was always, a few maverick-type directors, directors with strong personalities that trust their composer. For example, there was a 19-year-old composer, Bernard Herrmann, you know, composing Citizen Kane, you know. You know, Orson Welles said, "I trust this kid. You know, he's going to come up with something great." And then after, with Bernard Herrmann composed all those Hitchcock scores, and, you know, you can imagine the strong personalities of Orson Welles and Alfred Hitchcock, how they let their composer have a great dealing of freedom and expression.
Yeah, that says a lot. And, you know, I'm from the perhaps naive mindset that you bring a composer on that you're familiar with, that you're comfortable with, just turn the keys over to him or her and see what they could come up with.
When I composed the Alien 3, David Fincher was like that. He quite a few times said, "You know, I hired you as a composer, so, you know, I trust what you're going to give me. You know, I'm just going to ask you what, you know, what I prefer or what I'm after." And that was a very, very, very special project for me.
Yeah, and on the topic of science fiction, especially Alien 3 and Final Fantasy, how fulfilling has it been for you to traverse the many genres that films provided you with?
Well, of course, in science fiction, and I can include The Tempest as science fiction.
Sure, yeah.
and when you have that, you know, otherworldly realities, and it calls for an equally mind-bending musical tapestry, and that lifts you out of the ordinary and lifts you out of the box. And it's something that I really relish in you know, approaching those projects. The thing is, I also love melody very much. And I adore melody, singable melody. And so if the science fiction has opportunities where the characters require something that's tuneful and lyrical, I embrace that even more. As you know, I had a great time in doing Frida, the movie, because it required simplicity of melody that I really enjoy.
And of course, a great end result with Frida as well. And, you know, if you look back at that time frame, what was it just like to experience that whole rush of going through the awards and ultimately winning it?
Well, it's sort of like not so much a rush, but it's like going to the dentist and feeling the Novocaine. It's more of a dulling, is this really happening kind of thing. Did they really remove my left molar, you know?
Well, I have to tell you, you're one of the few in this business that has universal respect, both professionally and, you know, with this fan base. And you're doing some things connecting with the fans, early previews of The Tempest, and just what does the kind of fan following mean to you, the fan following that you have?
Well, it means everything to me, because if there's one out of 100 people that really, you know, gets what you're we're after, it's, well, it's all about sharing in the end. And that's the composer is lives a sad life if one doesn't share it with you know, humanity. So that's the bottom line. And also think about the other way. You know, everyone has their stories about their sports heroes and reaching out for an autograph, and they do something very rude or ignore that person, and it breaks the bond between the spectator and the performer. And I think there's a sacred bond there, and that has to be looked after.
That's beautifully stated, and more than anything else, I think music drives home that bond even deeper between listener and artist. So that's very well said.
Thank you, Tom.
You're quite welcome. And as we wrap up here, I'd love to know if you have any plans to follow up The Tempest with any other film projects here in the near future, perhaps next year. Anything you'd like to share on that end?
I'm kind of working on, I have about 10, 12 songs already written for a project that I'm thinking about doing with Julie called the Transposed Heads, which is based on a novella that Thomas Mann wrote in 1947, something like that. It's fantastical, erotic, comedic, love triangle that takes place in contemporary New York and mythological India.
Wow. Sounds compelling.
Yeah, it's quite a challenge, but it would be a musical. Everything is would be sung.
Perfect. I'm sure there's a lot of weight that comes with that, but like you so often do, I'm sure you'll come through wonderfully.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tom.
And I do thank you. I know you have a very busy schedule. I thank you so much for your time and for all your wonderful contributions to the art form.
Thank you, Tom.